Now, I'm going to just start the talky bit again and go from there, and that's what we'll end up with in this post. And hopefully next week or somewhere in between, I'll be able to kind of get it a little more sorted so we don't have those extra steps. Anyway, what I was talking about in the public post, and I'll revisit here, is that I feel a little bit ambivalent about using the hoarding of toilet paper as a lead illustration, but it's generated some pretty hilarious online stuff. All those bored university students sitting in front of their computers wondering what could I make about this with all the wit and mental energy that I was going to apply to my university classes and now can't in the same way. So they're cranking out the memes. So basically, there's been a lot of funny stuff coming my way because of bored university students in my house sending things along. But one of my favorites was an image called the Isolation of Smaug. Now, for those of you that aren't Lord of the Rings fans, Smaug is the most renowned of the dragons in Lord of the Rings, the kind of the king of the dragons, who lives in a dark cave, and the cave is filled with loot. It's filled with gold and treasure and things that Smaug has stolen and taken from people. And Smaug sleeps on top of the pile of treasure. That's like nobody's getting that. And so in the meme, of course, Smaug is sleeping on top of a pile of toilet paper, which I thought was pretty funny. Anyway, in reality, though, talking about that again, toilet paper hoarding, can feel like it has a kind of a weak kinship for me to that whole "do we talk about the shooter" conversation. That might feel like an egregious illustration, but what I'm after is that the issue can sort of be framed by the question, do we talk about this? When we talk about this, does it help? Should we talk about this? Or is it more helpful to not talk about this? Do we really want to talk about this again? And I would probably feel differently about this if, like Smaug, I had a garage full of the stuff for sale to the highest bidder, but I don't. And in fact, we've continued to stock that item in our house in the same way as usual, albeit with the occasional interruption in the supply chain. So when our personal stock needed to be replenished midweek or so, I went looking for some. I saw a lot of conspicuously empty shelves, of course. I saw front doors of stores where there was, hastily printed signs basically saying, "we're out, don't ask." And I finally found a little bit. I found the last little six-pack bundle of toilet paper at our neighborhood Sobeys. And when I brought it to the checkout to pay for it, the person behind the counter asked if I wanted an escort to my car. It's a true story. And she was, we both laughed about it. She was kidding, in the end, but it does point to ways in which this particular human behavior has become something of a marker for us under the circumstances, at least in this part of the world. So I'm going to work with it a little bit. I'm going to just choose to talk about it as an illustration. Because regardless of my personal opinion about that particular behavior of hoarding toilet paper, I think it can also help us reflect on something bigger. And I want to do that. I want to get at some of the big ideas that characterize our explorations as a community. I want to do that not in denial of the events that we're all being impacted by, but so that we don't start to think or behave as though current circumstances are the whole story. We're not the first humans to face events that baffle us. We're not the first group of people to ask apocalyptic questions of the world or ourselves. In fact, an awful lot of spiritual reflection has been generated from circumstances that felt to the participants in them like maybe this is the end of the world. They really felt like everything was changing and the future was unclear and uncertain. Well, exploring big ideas under those kind of circumstances can be a bit of a balancing act. My idea of balanced probably won't match yours. But I hope that we can extend one another some grace on that front and go exploring together anyways. I heard a story this past week from someone that was in a big box store and watched one person with what they described as a teetering tower of toilet paper in their cart refuse to give even one roll to a young mom that was not just asking them for it, but pleading with them for it. The same cashier who asked if I wanted an escort to my car mentioned that the local Costco had roped off their supply and put a staff person on duty to make sure that the posted limit of one per family was honored. Those kind of situations test us as human beings. They test our moral fiber, they test our ethics, they test our stated systems of belief. When I used to work at a big church that had limited parking, my favorite litmus test for useful belief systems was whether they worked in the parking lot or not. And I suppose it's mostly just a way of expanding the bumper sticker idea that nobody cares what you believe until they believe that you care. You can say you believe whatever you want, but the acid test is sort of how you behave what you believe, how we behave what we believe. It's a way of seeing if what we claim to believe can pass the DOO test. Now, if you're not familiar with that acronym, that's probably because, as far as I know, I invented it, but it's terribly obvious from my end. That's my shorthand for do unto others, DOO, do, which I still regard as probably the most enduring social, religious, and I would say spiritual axiom that I'm aware of. And I think there's a reason why some version of that idea shows up in almost every religious and ethical construct. It's because, among other things, you can test it in the parking lot. You can test it in the toilet paper aisle. You can test it in making a decision about whether to stay home or go out, or if you need to go out, how to do that, and what to do when you come home. All those kind of things. It's really pragmatic. And I think the wise ones know this. And that's why they give us their wisdom in this easy-to-remember format. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Don't do unto someone else what you wouldn't have them do unto you, and all the different versions that show up in different religions. But I think the wise ones also know that easy-to-remember is not the same thing as easy-to-do. And if I honestly think that if all we did in our lives was take the practice of this one axiom seriously, and we did it collectively, we could summon a different world than the one that we live in now. That might sound a little dramatic, melodramatic even, but when it comes to personal beliefs, that's one that I would hold. Now, it's not foolproof as an axiom, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's not a foolproof axiom, not least of all because it doesn't address the problem of perspective very well. What I want you to do unto me might not be a very good match for what you want or need done unto you. And that can be especially true when the doing is being done by a person of privilege. So listening to, getting to know my neighbor and having them tell me what might best be done is pretty essential to acting this out in life-giving ways. But even so, even with some of those complexities and limitations, the axiom endures. So at this point, having said all that, I can really only speak for myself, but I sometimes find DOO really challenging, really difficult. And when I stop to ask myself why that is, the answer usually comes down in one of two places. The easiest one to access is fear. I retreat from DOO probably, in fact, I would say even most likely because of some fear that is in me. And when I try to probe those fears, I often end up in a space where I think, you know, my circle of trust is too small. In fact, my circle of trust might be about the same size as the circle of me, pretty often. And when I'm in that space, I retreat into looking out for myself first, after which I might get on with looking out for my neighbor if I like them, or I already trust them, or maybe I need something from them. I want to engage some kind of reciprocity in my own service. Not that valorous, not that virtuous, you know. And the second reason why I might find myself in a place where I'm finding do unto others really challenging is related to the first. When I retreat from DOO, it might be because of some belief that I hold about humans in general. What are my working assumptions about the other in that axiom? Do unto others. What am I assuming about the other? Where do my assumptions about the other come from? How did they get to be the assumptions that I hold? And am I even aware of the roots of those assumptions? Can I even call up the origins of those beliefs and question them? Because the origins of those beliefs might actually be the root of the problem. since as a community we gather, even when we do it virtually like this, to explore what we believe, I'm going to poke at that one a bit. I grew up being taught that the Hebrew origin story for humans, as it's found in the translated poetry at the beginning of the book of Genesis, means that all humans arrive in the world morally broken. Not morally marred or flawed, but irrevocably fallen. And not able to rise above that state without right belief and right response to the divine, who alone can lift us out of that state of being. And I was taught that those ideas about human beings were God's truth. I've since learned that those ideas have a very human origins. Not surprisingly, right belief and right response as they relate to those ideas were defined by the same folks that gave us that reading of the Genesis story. So I'm going to leave a lot out here, but you know, we live in a world connected to the internet. And so if you want to do your homework on these ideas historically, you know, the information's all out there, easy to find. But even leaving out a lot, I'm gonna just say basically Augustine got the ball rolling on that interpretation of the story. The church fathers kept it rolling all the way down to my, you know, late 20th century theological education. And if I'm looking at my fellow human beings through that lens, the lens of we're all busted, and I'm in the toilet paper aisle, and somebody asks me to share my hoard, why would I do it? Nobody else out there is going to do the same for me if I need them to, because, well, because they're fallen. They, like me, are going to be looking out for themselves, right? Unless, of course, they've been lifted out of that state or taught to rise above it by right belief. Now, to bring a little balance to the rhetoric, the same religious system that taught me to think of all of us as busted also exposed me to the teachings of Jesus that so robustly reinforced the importance of living in this kind of upside-down world in which the first would be last and in which self-donation was the key component of a saved and saving way of life, and that giving to others was the path for finding my own life, and so on. These things are all dynamically present in the teachings of Jesus. And those are all beliefs that can go a long way to altering that self-centered behavior. Now, your experience might be nothing like mine in this regard, but one of the ways that the good news of those teachings that I just mentioned got undermined for me was that they were often passed along in ways that either suggested or even outright stated that the only people in the world that could be trusted to act them out were other people who called themselves Christians. In fact, not even all those people could really be trusted, but only the ones that were the kind of Christians that me and mine were. And how could you tell who was in that circle of trust and who wasn't? Well, mostly by lifestyle codes and cultural boundary markers. Who lived like you did, religiously, socially, economically, even politically? Who used the right language to articulate their beliefs? That's who you share your toilet paper with, people. Not some desperate stranger in the grocery store aisle. They just might take the gift of your toilet paper and clobber you with it and run off with your whole stash. Well, these days, I feel like I'm surrounded by really beautiful examples of people caring for one another. And of course, the other stories are out there too, but I'm gonna focus on the positive. Here's an example. On Wednesday, I got a message in my inbox from one of the parkour organizations that Tyrion, one of our kids who's a parkour athlete, is associated with. And I expect I'm on their list because, you know, at some point my credit card was involved. Because they supply parkour equipment. In any case, their bulk communication to their electronic mailing list included some interesting stuff, and I want to read you a little bit of it, okay? Because this is from a group of people that would in no way meet that sort of criteria I was talking about of you're in the inside religious group, you're part of the tribe that's safe. This is a business. And for that matter, if you want to think about it in sort of not judgmental necessarily, but sort of parsing social terms, you know, from an organization that does business with people that are part of a fringe sport that doesn't always regard property in the ways that the prevailing culture regards property in terms of public spaces. So, you know, an interesting community, right? Anyway, this is part of what they sent out. We send love and good vibes to everyone navigating the effects of COVID-19, coronavirus. These difficult times call for positivity, but also decisive action. The well-being of our global community is our number one priority. In order to do our part and help flatten the curve of the COVID-19 pandemic, on March 16th, we proactively implemented social distancing measures recommended by the World Health Organization and Center for Disease Control and Prevention. We temporarily closed our flagship retail location in Vancouver, BC, Canada on March 16th, and it will remain closed until further notice. Our website and social channels will remain available 24/7, and for the next 2 weeks, we have arranged for free expedited shipping on all orders, so if you do need something from us, you can expect to get it quickly. Just use the code UNITED at checkout. And here we sort of start to get into the part of this that I was most intrigued by. We've taken additional steps in our office and fulfillment facilities. Our small team will continue to work remotely or in a safe and individual/staggered work environment. Now listen to this. This global event will make us collectively stronger by raising awareness of our common vulnerabilities and reminding us to work together for the greater good. That's just a long sentence that says, do unto others. Not a bad thing to say, but it's timeless, it's ancient, it's enduring, and it's showing up here. I think that's very beautiful. Wherever this finds you, stay safe, stay home, be kind. That sounds like another ancient idea to me. Love one another. And keep moving. We appreciate your support during this unprecedented time as we remain hashtag united by motion. Now, a whole bunch of that is interesting, but what really focused my attention was that last sentence and hashtag, we remain united by motion. These folks are a bunch of athletes with a sport with moving freely and efficiently over mixed terrain and obstacles as their common bond. That's what they have in common. And that got me thinking, if we can unite around something like that, if humans can unite around something like that, what unites us? What unites us globally? What unites us locally? But particularly, what unites us as the community of the table? We've had a shared event as sort of a symbol of, I think, some of the things that unite us. But right now that shared event has this shape, which is different. What unites us? I think it's fair to say we're not united by a common theology or even a common belief system. There are too many of us in the community that would self-describe as having no particular system of belief for that to be the case. So ways of believing that say, I'm in and you're out, are not necessarily the prevailing ones for us. Which then, for me at least, begs the question, is there anything that does unite us? And I think the thing that probably comes closest, and this could be a real mess, so as always, take it or leave it, you know, and feel free to comment so we can interact about it. But I think the thing that probably comes closest is our shared commitment to exploring what we believe. I don't think it's my place to say that's why we're all here. But I think I can say that's why the table exists in whatever form the table takes at a given moment. And from what I know of most of the people that would identify the table as some sort of home for their explorations, I think we have that in common. We could use the hashtag united by exploration and feel like it was a pretty good fit. Now, I think that's pretty great in itself, And I also think that an idea like that can be strengthened when we connect it to a way of imagining the world that is rooted in ancient wisdom and story. Now, that won't be everyone's preferred way of anchoring an idea or of anchoring their explorations of what they believe, but it's one that I find myself returning to over and over again, and I'm going to share it with you in the hope that it can be helpful to you, like it is to me. So let me back up into that Hebrew origin story for a minute. There are two ideas in that story that I think might stir our imagination in good ways about these things. And the first is that the shape of the poetry in the beginning of Genesis, the shape of the poetry itself doesn't resound with the theme of cursing, but with the theme of blessing. From whatever place we understand the universe to have begun, and at this point, I would say in this community, probably the majority of people in the community don't share the poet's perspective that it sort of poofed into being out of the words of the divine, but that's the poet's way of talking about what they see and experience around them and trying to imagine origins for it. But however you imagine the origins of the universe, the essential pieces of it, as the poets whose work we have translated for us in Genesis, the way they imagined those origins included the belief that those origins were good. That's how that shows up in the poems, in the stories. If Genesis was a song instead of poems, the hook, you know, the earworm, the little thing you couldn't get out of your head when the song was over, would be good, good, good. Now, the poets are honest enough to not ignore the challenges to that idea. It's not all good. And if that didn't feel self-evident before, then let's just look around at our present circumstance and say, no, clearly, it's not all good. But the refrain, even when speaking about the challenges, the chorus of the song, is always good, good, good. And when they get to the bridge, you know, the part of the song where the chords change a little bit and you sit up and pay attention again, even though you've kind of gotten used to the good, good, good chorus. When they get to that part, which is the part where the humans come into the story, what happens is that good changes to very good. That's fascinating to me. And part of that very good, the Genesis stories tell us, is that humans, all of us, are at our very best when we're not alone and when we understand that we exist to help one another. That that's actually why we're all here instead of just one or two of us being here. That's why there is humanity from the vantage point of those poets. Now, a lot of times that story of we're here to help one another gets taken, I think, far too literally and far too small away from the Genesis stories, and it's like, oh look, there's a lonely man, and the lonely he needs a lonely she. Just for the record, the word Adam is not a gendered word. This is about a bigger idea than gender, by far. This is about this enormous human idea. These are prototypical humans. These are first humans. And it's not good for humanity to be in isolation, which takes us back to some of the ideas at the beginning in that mangled preamble, you know, ended up in the wrong Facebook page, that we actually need to practice physical distancing, not social distancing, in the sense that we need a physical bubble around ourselves for health protection, but we need to not let go of being in contact with one another because we're actually not made to be alone. We don't do it well, and we never have. And the poets could see that. And so they were like, what kind of story could we tell that would help get this message through, that would help us realize just how deeply built into us as humans it is, that even if we're good, good, good alone, we're never very good alone. We need one another for the very good to happen and to be poured out into the world. That's how it happens. It's interesting to me that in the rest of that story, the ways that these humans in the story meet one another's needs is through incredibly creative acts. And that's sort of how the story unfolds, right? they meet one another's needs by using language creatively. There's this whole chunk of the Genesis stories. It's all about people naming the animals, which again, unfortunately, has been read too small. It's like, it's as though, you know, people reading the story are imagining a giraffe walking in and two humans standing in the middle of this empty savanna and looking at it and going, oh, anything with that a neck that long must be called giraffe. Which is not the point of the story at all. The point is that the humans in the story are caring for one another and for the world that they're in by creative acts. And one way that those creative acts show up is in language, is in putting words around the things that they're seeing and experiencing. And not just any words, but words that help one another make sense of what they're seeing and what we're seeing and experiencing, and responding to them in ways that are about nurturing things, about caring for in creation in the story, but about caring for the good world in which we find ourselves. So they do that through language. And that language gives shape to beauty. That's what naming something is, right? Giving shape to the thing we see. They do it by using action to give shape to love, and by using imagination to give shape to the power behind it all, for which we might choose to use God language. Right? That's that same thing. It's a creative act. It's the humans working together creatively in loving, caring, kind ways, like the parkour folks reminded us, to extend the goodness of the world that they have access to other people who need it. So it's a very good action to share the goodness that we have. And I see that cropping up all over the place these days. And that makes my heart happy. That makes me think we're doing the thing that I would say, according to those ancient stories that anchor my imagination in so many ways, the thing that we were made to do. And I think that's pretty awesome. Want to do something good in the world? Want to do something, you know, good in the toilet paper aisle? Look at the other person that you find there. Imagine them to be very good, even if they don't look or sound like you. And imagine yourself as very good, but not as very good as you could be if you shared the goodness you have access to with one another. And then ask the question, what could bring us closer together under these circumstances? And if the other person is open to such an offering, that's the listening to our neighbor part, then, you know, DOO that and do that. It's not the whole answer, but it might help us think and be creative about how we can engage with one another and with the world around us in a season like this in ways that are life-giving, that are very good. Thanks, folks. We'll do this again soon, and hopefully in a more seamless way. And in the meantime, I look forward to interacting with you however you choose to. Please do feel free to reach out. My contact information is available on the website. And I would be delighted to interact with you however we can in a season where we can't actually be in the same room together with any kind of regularity. All right? Love and peace. Bye for now.